Hello, I'm Dr. Barbara Becker Holstein, positive psychologist and happiness coach, and you are now listening to Happiness for Women Only. This is a show that comes out of the passionate Internet Voices talk radio on the web, and you can always find me and all the other wonderful guests at www.internetvoicesradio.com. And go there on the front page. There's instructions for listening to my show every week and everyone else's show, how to download the podcast, etc. This is a great international network, and I am thrilled to be part of it with my new show. This is so exciting. I hope you can hear it in my voice. Let me tell you, before I introduce my guest, a little bit about my work. After all, I may be entirely new to you. I've been in private practice as a psychologist licensed in the state of New Jersey for over 25 years. A while back, about 15, 18 years ago, I started my research studying women who were not part of my practice. And it was this case study research that led ultimately to what I call the enchanted self. Actually, and I can't tell you the whole story now, but briefly summarizing, I discovered through my case study research with women of all ages, that we have a great capacity for happiness, for pleasure, for a sense of well-being. However, I also discovered a dark side to this happiness, and this was unhappy. And the dark side was that we're often thwarted by society and its messages and the way we interpret the messages from society. And we're often thwarted as women, even by ourselves, the ways that we come to view our lives, the hustle and bustle, and the amount of caretaking and work we have to do. And the end result is that we often find ourselves patterning and repeating lives that are not filled with happiness and pleasure. Even at best, we may just find ourselves sort of struggling once in a while to come back to some secret place that does give us pleasure, whether it's cooking a special meal or sitting in a bubble bath. But it's too little, and sometimes it's too late, and sometimes for some women, they almost never return. So for me, as a positive psychologist, it's become my life's work and my passion to find ways to teach women and share with women that we can come back to the part of ourselves that is what I call the enchanted self, the part that holds within it not only what uniquely makes you happy and makes you feel content, but also holds within it the key to how to regenerate and rebirth and renew the parts of yourself that you're going to have to get in touch with in order to achieve, once again, a state of happiness in the now, in the present, and also how to get into the future so that you will have more times when you can feel whole, when you can feel happy, when you can feel joyful. I've developed many, many ways of teaching you how to get to these states. You can always, let me just reference you, because again, all of you don't know me yet. You can always come back to one of my two websites, either enchantedself.com, that's one word, enchantedself, or theenchantedself, all one word, .com. And they'll bring you in to all my archives, my newsletters, my articles, my free sign-ups for daily blessings, for my email newsletter, for free contests. We have fun contests, all sorts of things. You can always come home to the Enchant itself. Meanwhile, let me say that one of the major ways I help women rekindle their sense of happiness is through the seven gateways to enchantment. These I've developed very, very carefully over the last few years. You can get a free copy of the seven gateways to enchantment by writing me. I'll tell you right now an address that seems to always work. You know, with email, it's sort of this vast universe, and sometimes things get lost. But write to me at barbara.holstein@gmail.com. Seems to be working very well, and just put free paper, and I will email it to you. The Seven Gateways is a system of helping you find happiness again and again. Basically, I take you through all the relevant and important critical gateways that women have to go through. The first one being a sense of self-esteem and self-worth. Without that, it ain't nothing. No one else is going to help you get anywhere. The second gateway is understanding your own life, your own history, finding how to even determine what are your talents, your strengths, your lost potential. Again, it's on you, baby. No one else will bother. The third gateway is how do we get our needs met? How do we tackle what we need to do? For women, this is a critical gateway, usually tying into getting the right schooling, the right development in ways that unless we can present ourselves, we will not be presentable. So the universe will not work in our favor till we come up to the task we need to do. The fourth gateway is replenishment, pleasure, learning how to not run on empty, how to stay reasonably intact at all times, getting enough sleep, eating well, etc., are the obvious ones, but how to build in enough pleasure, enough fun into our daily lives. Critical, critical gateway. The next gateway is finding mentors, learning to recognize what we need to learn, and also being a mentor, seeing ourselves in a positive enough light that we do not just think we have nothing to offer. Again, a very important reciprocal gateway for women. And the next gateway is not isolating, not being alone, learning how to connect and belong to community. Many women, when we're down, we get a little depressed, we withdraw, and we further a cycle of unhappiness. So this gateway teaches us the reverse model. And the last gateway is positive acts, positive deeds, how we can always access a better mood and help create a better world by doing in the reality of living on earth. We may be spiritual, but we sure are physical, how to move forward in a practical way in the world. That gives you a little sense of who I am. You can see on my website the books I've written, or just Google me, as they say it. You'll get a lot of history. But I want to give the rest of the time today really to my guest, with me playing a little more secondary role, because while some weeks I will be alone or some weeks I will have a colleague that may focus on the Enchanted Self work, today I have a guest and I'm going to focus on her work, which is so vital to girls and women, tied into resiliency. So I'm going to be introducing in a minute Dr. Sandra Prince Embry, who is currently the director of the Resiliency Center of Allenhurst. I'm going to let her give you her contact information when she talks. She's a clinical psychologist, a marriage and family therapist. She's worked with women, families, teens, mothers and daughters in therapy for 25-plus years. She's the author of The Resiliency Scales for Children and Adolescents, 2005, and The Resiliency Scales for Adolescents, 2007, through Harcourt Assessments Incorporated. She's authored many, many articles on role identity status in women and sphere of influence. And she is one of the seven founders of the Feminist Therapy Collective of Philadelphia, now the Women's Therapy Collective. And when we were talking offline, she had told me she was one of the seven mothers of the Feminist Therapy Collective, which I love that word because it was so feminine. Anyway, I want to now welcome Dr. Sandra Prinzembre. Welcome.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you very much.
So pleased that you're here to talk to us about such a critical subject that plays in anyone, any woman who's attempting, any girl who's attempting to even get near the enchanted self. It's so pertinent. Can you tell us what you mean by resiliency and why it's so important developmentally, Sandy?
Okay. The definition of resiliency is the qualities in the child, teenager, or adult that allow them to face adversities and social pressures in a way that they can recover from, ride through, maintain functioning, and in some cases grow and function even better. And it's what I consider the underpinnings of resiliency are basically core aspects of development. And the reason that I'm focusing on that right now, especially in children and adolescents, is that in society we have had to face a lot of adversity, perhaps more adversity than in the past, and there is more of a focus on preparing our youth for adversity. And, of course, women are a special group in that there are special forces on girls and women that need to be dealt with. But basically, it's about surviving and dealing with adversity and maintaining your functioning and growing even in the face of adversity.
So what are some core things that people carry around that are essential to have available if you're going to weather the ups and downs of life and still grow at the same time?
Well, what I did basically was pull from my many years of clinical work and also research and going through the literature on development, resiliency, and developmental psychopathology, and I came across three basic concepts that seem to be the core concepts in development that can either go well or go awry. And those concepts are developing a sense of mastery, developing a sense of relatedness, and emotional reactivity.
Could we go through each one?
Yes, we can, but I also want to make the point my definition of resiliency is a relational one in that it's the way these three constructs fit together. And whether they're balanced with each other in a good enough way, that constitutes resiliency. Whereas, on the other hand, if they're not balanced or there's a discrepancy between resources and fragility, that constitutes vulnerability. And in developing the resiliency scales, I give people, counselors and clinicians, a way of measuring these constructs as well as the relationship between the constructs.
So before you get into that, just to help people, since I've been a school psychologist and I know the way the mothers' minds work when they hear about their kids, mm-hmm. You're saying that a girl might have one of the core mastery, the core strengths you're going to talk about, and the parent could be very confused why that person is still struggling, but they would have to also understand that it's an interrelated network that has to happen.
Exactly. Exactly. And one of the good things about the resiliency scales is that it's framed in a way that parents can understand that, because it puts it out in very simple terms so that parents can understand it and also teens can understand it, so that it gives you a guideposts for specific areas that you can work on or enhance to make for better resiliency.
Excellent. Okay, go for it. We're going to talk a little bit about each one, right?
Okay, yes. These are a lot of pretty rich constructs, so I know we're not going to have enough time to cover them in detail. So I'll just give a brief review.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sense of mastery is basically the degree to which a person, child, has a sense of optimacy, a sense of self-efficacy, and along with that, adaptability. And sense of mastery has been identified by many theorists, many researchers, and also clinicians as very core to an individual's well-being. Now, if we want to talk about that, well, actually, before doing that, let me go on to sense of relatedness. I'll define the constructs, and then we can get into more specifics about how that can go well or not in girls. Sense of relatedness, which is the second construct, has to do with a girl's sense of trust in others, comfort with others, perceived support by others, and tolerance of others. And this is linked really to attachment theory, and again, it's one of the core aspects of development. And having a good enough sense of relatedness is critical to development, as well as critical to resiliency in facing adversity. The third concept is emotional reactivity, and that basically it can be a physiological characteristic, and that's just how easily aroused, how easily upset a person is, and a lot of literature is coming up that links that to self-regulation and whether a person can manage their own emotions. Emotional reactivity is something that can be impacted by early stress, and it can be impacted cumulatively by repeated stressors over time. And the way that relates to resiliency is that if a person's emotional reactivity is super high, they can be more vulnerable to it be negatively impacted by adversity.
So those are
the three constructs.
Right. And now, for those of us that work much better with examples than just the construct, although I think it's essential to put the construct out there,
mm-hmm.
In terms of mastery, can mm-hmm. you talk more about, let's say, I'll give you an example, a 12-year-old girl that had been just top of her class in math and science, 4th to 6th grade. Now she's in 7th grade, and she is no longer doing well at all.
Okay.
What might be going on?
Okay. That's a good one, Barbara, because that's sort of almost a typical anecdote that will occur with young girls. And I'm going to tie it into the sex role stereotyping and how that impacts particularly on sense of mastery. Basically, for women, society sort of gives a double message with respect to sense of mastery. That on the one hand, we know it's important developmentally, but on the other hand, how mastery is defined by for girls and women is a little ambiguous, because it's often framed in terms of doing for others or caretaking, being a good wife and mother, which are all important things, but they're somewhat, that definition of mastery is restricted in that it doesn't include things like enjoying doing something well just because you're able to do it well. And so girls, especially when they reach puberty, are sort of confronted with a dilemma, and that is, what happens to me if I continue to enjoy being good at something? Will I be less socially and sexually desirable? Because the definitions of female attractiveness do not include somebody who's good at things, who's good at mastering things, so that a girl who is good at math or science